What up, people? What up? What up? Welcome to the Who Got Next podcast. I'm your host, E-Dub, and we are back with another show. We got one of my frat brothers in here, Charlotte native. Dave, what's going on, man?
What's good, bro? You all right?
Man, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. So I wanted to talk to you about some of the things that you got going on. Of course, you know, we got acquainted, acquainted a few years back just from the sneaker culture.
For sure.
We got mutual friends. Of course, we got a bond of the ice cold connection.
Of course.
But outside of that, you know, I think you are a heavy contributor of the Charlotte area with some of the things that you got going on. So what I want to do is just kind of have a conversation with you, man, about some of the personal things you got going on from an entrepreneurial standpoint.
Sure.
And also some of the things that's going on in Charlotte. So kind of get started. So I know this is that cliche question, but who is Dave? Who is Dave?
Well, I don't even know where to really start. Kind of juggling a lot of hats, but I mean, my name is David Butler. I was born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina. I spent maybe 3 years outside of Charlotte growing up, living in Pontiac, Michigan, which is about 40 miles outside of Detroit.
Okay.
So I was up there for 3 years. But other than that, you know, that and going to undergrad up at Winston-Salem State University from 2009 to 2013. But the rest of that time has been spent in Charlotte. I'm a photographer, creative consultant, brand owner. I just do a little bit of everything, man. I just try and bridge gaps and connect people and try and push everything forward in terms of Charlotte and the culture that we're building out here.
Okay, that's what's up, man. You talked about bridging the gaps. So what I want to do is talk about, you know, I want to fill in some of the gaps of, you know, where I know you from and some of the things that you got going on. So when I first met you, you were doing, I won't say what you were doing, but Dave Has Wings.
Right, right.
That was a concept that you created. I thought was pretty dope. So kind of talk about like what gave you this entrepreneurial drive.
Mm-hmm.
For one, coming out of college. I've heard the story a couple of times just from different outlets.
Right.
But let's talk about that. Let's talk about how you got to where you are now. You know, you got to where you are now with some of the other ventures that you have going on.
Gotcha.
So was Dave Has Wings the first thing that you kind of conspired coming out of college?
Yeah. So it originally started as just my Twitter name. It was I needed a Twitter name in 2009 when I was in college, and it started as that. But as I graduated and I was coming back home, I knew I wanted to get involved in the scene because I knew some things were starting to bubble because people were coming from the city to Winston, and I started to see some things that I knew I didn't see beforehand in terms of just like seeing Charlotte on T-shirts and like there just being starting to be a vibe. I started to hear music from Charlotte artists and things like that. So mm-hmm. I knew that there was something bubbling, and I wanted to get involved. So I wanted to start a website and try and figure out how I could get involved that way and use my photography to kind of like leverage some conversation and meet people, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I started DaveHasWings.com, and I did that really just, and I was kind of just like a blogger to a certain degree. It literally started with me seeing flyers for events on Twitter, and I would take those flyers and post them on my website, and then I would tweet those links back out and tag the people.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually people started like inviting me to stuff, and then I started going to shows and taking pictures and doing recaps, and people started to notice my photography, and you know, it just kind of went from there. I was taking that time because I was also working full time at Coca-Cola. I came out of school working at Coca-Cola doing supply chain and logistics.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my outlet during that time, you know what I mean? So I would go out to these shows, I would go out to different events, you know, vendor fairs, all that kind of stuff, and then just kind of take pictures and network and meet people and let people know, like, yo, my name's Dave, Dave Has Wings, I'm a photographer, blah, 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 blah. And so it was really just taking a year or two to really brand myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also, during that time, I put out my first photography book in 2014. And then I also had my first solo exhibition out at Duff & Swat's old location in Noda before they got displaced. During that time, it was really, Dave Has Wings was really kind of an experiment and me branding myself and me kind of getting out here and figuring out who was who and what was what and learning what was going on and how I fit into the greater picture of what was happening.
Okay.
So it was just like an entry point.
And you did, so within that entry point, you had kind of started also some merch. Surrounded by Dave Has Wings.
I thought
it was pretty dope. So where did that concept, did it come from just out the blogging, or was that something that you always wanted to do and it just kind of it just kind of happened?
It was, it originally kind of goes back. I have been working, at that point, I had 3 or 4 years in kind of like merch and streetwear, because mm-hmm. I started back in 2011. I originally got into streetwear around 07, 08.
Okay.
I started participating and stopped. I wasn't just like purchasing it anymore, but I actually started like making things and contributing around 2011.
Okay.
I had a professor that had a media company, and I did the merchandise for his media company and kind of built his online store, shot all his lookbooks. I treated it like it was a streetwear brand, even though it was kind of promoting this media company that was like a blog and did radio stuff and all this kind of different mm-hmm. stuff. So that's where the kind of the original itch was from, seeing streetwear and wanting to be a part of it. And then that working with Afro Blue Media was the opportunity to participate and create something. From there, I also helped out with a brand called United Nation. Shout out to my boy, Justin Jenkins, Mr. Deadhead out in New York doing his thing. But he was a Winston alum as well. He started a brand on campus. And through after seeing what I did with Afro Blue, he recruited me to come work on United. So we did United Nation for a couple years, and went out to South Carolina, did the big mix with KJ Kearney and Higher Learning and all of that, and kind of was building up some steam, and then eventually it kind of dissipated. So I was already in the mold, and then, you know, in the process, knew how everything worked in terms of getting merch out, and I knew it was a big part of branding, and I always was wearing a hat. You know what I mean? If I was like, if I'm going to wear a hat all the time, I'm going to wear a hat that's got my name on it so that, mm-hmm. you know, other people can start to recognize that. And it was all a part of the brand, man. It was just a part of, like, people understanding and seeing. You see the D with the asterisk, you see that signature logo, you know, kind of have an understanding or a base understanding of what I was about at that time.
Okay. So after you had Dave Has Wings, what happened after that? Did you continue to do that, or was it something that you stopped? Did you want to move into something else, or?
I definitely wanted to. I felt like there was a time for progression. I did 3 or 4 pop-up shops where I was selling books, merch, art, all, and I would do special collections for each pop-up. And I started to notice that just like the business behind it wasn't good. Like, you know, just having to rent out a space and then charge people to come into the space and then also expect them to pay merch and then also having to pay people to perform. And it just wasn't a good business arrangement. So that kind of got me thinking about how I could approach things from a different perspective. And how I could do something that was going to be impactful, but also profitable at the same time. So I started to I fell back and just decided to open myself up and learn and think and allow myself to grow and have different experiences so that I could get to kind of where I'm at now. But that's what kind of pushed me in that direction, was just looking at the 3 or 4 things that I did. And while it was dope and people knew me for it and people were waiting for stuff and asking me about, like, yo, when is the next collection drop? When you doing another event, et cetera, et cetera. I knew that it wasn't sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So it caused me to just kind of take a step back and kind of reassess what I was doing.
Okay. And during that time frame, do you have, and I always like to ask this question to everybody, especially entrepreneurs, did you have a mentor? Was it somebody that you reached out to, or was this all just self-driven?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was self-driven. I wouldn't say there was kind of like one person that I went to that was like giving me keys, because I don't think there's anybody that's kind of building things the way that I'm building things.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely was having different experiences that would and meeting different people and kind of researching and looking at different entrepreneurs around, like via the internet and checking out YouTube videos and things like that. People like Tristan Walker, who runs Bevel, a lot of people like Gary Vee. Just trying to open my mind up to doing things in a more sustainable business manner. Started to do that research, because I already had a business degree, so I understand the terminology, I get how everything works, but building something is a little bit different than getting it in theory. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So I guess it's more so influences.
Yeah, it was definitely that. And then kind of looking and studying brands that I liked. So I studied Bevel. I studied and everything I could about Tristan Walker and the way that they built Bevel. I studied people like Bobby Hundreds and the way that they built the Hundreds, him and Ben. I studied, did as much research as I could on Stussy and Sean Stussy, like just brands and companies that I thought were interesting and had lasting impact. I tried to study them as much as possible and kind of decode some of the principles that are baked into what they built.
Yeah. Side note for some of the ones who don't know who Bobby Hundreds is, that's a clothing.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That's a clothing line. Some people really don't know about it.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
I do, but I just wanted to name that because I think that's a good example with some of the things he went through to go through that. So you had Dave Has Wings. you sat back for a second. You wanted to kind of reassess things and how you wanted to move forward. Now comes Analog Luxury. Mm-hmm. I've done a little research on it, but I got the source right here. Right. So kind of explain to everybody what Analog Luxury is.
No doubt. Analog Luxury is a fine art and housewares brand that is inspired by taking authentic Polaroid pictures and shooting 35mm disposable film. So basically what that means is I live life, I go out, I meet people, I hang out, I go to shows, I do shoots with my Polaroid camera and with a disposable camera. And in turn, those experiences and the art that comes from those experiences is then transferred into housewares and fine art. So like right now, running with the No Shortcuts capsule collection, and that was actually based off a photo of a construction sign that I took in Noda. Mm-hmm. So I was leaving a poetry show one night. My boy Abstracts had thrown something at a spot that used to be there. It used to be called the Wine Up. And
salute to the Wine Up. I used to go there all the time.
It's an OG
man.
Spot. It was an OG spot for sure. So we were leaving the Wine Up, and or it might have been called Upstage at that point. So we were leaving there, and I saw there's a detour sign from where they were doing the light rail construction. This was probably 2-3 years ago. And I just took a quick picture of it with my Polaroid camera and kind of sat back, and I was going through the photos a while back, and it just kind of, I sat on that photo and it kind of resonated with me, and this whole concept of life, you know, sending you on detours and making you take the long route to learn lessons and for you to grow as a person kind of resonated through this photo. Those are the thoughts that it kind of evoked. So I put together a capsule collection with that, and that's kind of how the whole thing flows. And depending on what it is, I could be making curtains, I could be making bedding, I could be making a towel set or some coasters or any of those different things. And I wanted to bring that kind of streetwear background that I have, mm-hmm. and merge it into more of this, I guess more of an adult context, because a lot of my friends and stuff, they're not necessarily wearing t-shirts and stuff anymore. They're not wearing snapbacks anymore. They're buying properties, and everybody's getting families, and they buying income properties and all mm-hmm. this different stuff. So it's kind of an evolution of who I was before in terms of, like, now I'm making dope things still using that same kind of eye for graphics and that streetwear feel, but putting it on something that's a little bit more adult, something for your home, something for your space, something you can have in your office if you're a creative, or even if you're not a creative. But something that's going to keep you inspired, something that's going to keep you intrigued, and it's going to inspire you to work hard and get towards your goals. So that's what Analog Luxury is, I guess, in a nutshell, or in a ramble, whatever you would consider.
That's pretty good. Pretty good information. So Dave Has Wings, Analog Luxury, Charlotte.
Right.
As you stated before, you are native of Charlotte. I'm not technically a native of Charlotte.
Right.
But I have been here. I have been here for a while, and I've kind of seen, from my time frame here, and I know you've mm-hmm. seen it from the beginning.
Right, tenfold.
Tenfold. So, yeah, but from my time frame here, I have seen Charlotte expand building-wise. You know, I've seen that. I've seen certain things come in here. I would say the premise of this whole show is to basically talk about the identity, mm-hmm. The identity of Charlotte. And, you know, we had a brief conversation prior to recording, and you touched on quite a few things that I think a lot of us think about.
Right.
For an entrepreneur standpoint, what Charlotte has to offer, what we offer to Charlotte.
Right.
So just kind of touch on that. And before you touch on that, you know, this is the show basically about creating.
Mm-hmm.
You had a quote on something that I saw before where it says creators don't think about infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to create.
Right.
So what do you think it is about the creative aspect of it for the ones that just want to do that,
mm-hmm.
but don't think about what it takes to get there? Not just the hard work and preparation, right. but the business side, as what you kind of alluded to
right.
briefly. So just kind of touch on that. Like I said, it's just a conversation that we have. And so
for sure.
And yeah, what you think?
I think a lot of it is how we're socialized. So when you're growing up and you're going through school, you're never really taught how to take your ideas and turn them into a revenue stream. they kind of separate you, right? Like you kind of get, we all get thought, like everybody hears the words starving artist growing up. Mm-hmm. You assume that artists, there's a world assumption that like to be an artist at some point, you have to be broke, you have to have not had money, you have to have gone through some type of struggle, the best art comes from a dark place, et cetera, et cetera. And while some of that has to be true, I think a lot of that is, while some of that may be true, I think it, there's also the context to that is kind of like a how society, how we built society, right? Like how we've structured things over time. And it may have just been a fact of what it was in the past, but mm-hmm. things, you know, as things grow, things change. And I think ultimately what it comes down to is like school's not teaching you how to take your ideas and turn them into money. They're teaching you to become a regular citizen and get a regular job. They're in a mass sense. They're teaching you different things. And if you have to chase those smaller creative thoughts yourself, and then on top of that, you have to figure out how to make them profitable. And luckily we're in a space now where more people are able to do that because of things like the internet and because of the information that's around and because of just the different resources that are out here now in terms of technology and how technology has changed the world. But I think ultimately that's what it comes down to is like you kind of get separated. People like to say like left brain versus right brain and all these different things. And I think I'm blessed enough to have floated in between both of those categories.
That's me. Even though I'm more of a right side brain kind of guy, but mm-hmm. I get it. Some people are not aware of that.
Right. Right.
Aware of the left side.
There's a lot of data on both sides that says like that like pushes that theory forward. And then there's data that says that theory isn't really a thing. True. It's another one of those things where it could be socialized, where like we're taught or told that this is how it works and it may not actually work like that. So, but I think ultimately it's just how we're brought up. We're taught that like creative things are not something that you can make a living off of. And at some point, the people who have been really, really successful that are creative was like, I think I can figure this out, or I'm going to stick to my guns until I figure this out. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the space that, you know, we exist in now.
Do you think that that mind frame of thinking is something that powers your drive?
Wait, what mind frame specifically?
As far as thinking, because you're from an entrepreneurial side of things. You like to create. Do you think like all the things that you just spoke about now? Do you think that is something that powers the drive of you moving forward?
Oh, 100%. Like a lot of the projects. Shout out to my boy Devin Smith up there at Revolt TV right now doing his thing. Like a lot of the things we're working on are strictly based off of that. Like we literally, when we did Creative NC a couple years ago, we noticed that this was the problem. Like in school, they are not teaching kids to build a lifestyle around the things that you're interested in and understanding what comes with that and knowing that you, if you know what you like and you can find a job that has to do with what you like as opposed to what's going to make you the most money, mm-hmm. then in general, you'll be happier. And in general, you're going to work harder at what you want to, you know what I mean, at what you want to do. And once we identified that problem, we immediately got to work on putting together things that are going to resolve that problem in terms of working with the formal education system. So I don't want to speak too much on that because we're still getting everything together with it.
No doubt.
And running some pilot programs and things like that. But like that's exactly like a lot of the projects or a lot of what I do is centered around helping people become more self-aware, find out what they like and what they don't like. And once you find out what you like, how can you build your life around that and find a job that has to do with that or create a job that has to do with that? Because everybody's not really meant to be an entrepreneur. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, some people just really don't. Like, it's a really stressful thing. Like, I've seen some real hardcore entrepreneurs work. And to a certain degree, like, I don't have that type of intensity. Like, I'm not the type of person that's, like, striving to make $1 million or, like, five. You know what I mean? Like, if I can get there and I can do it away, that's cool. You know what I'm saying? But like, I don't wake up in the morning, like, my motivation doesn't come from, like, yo, I'm trying to make as much money as possible or I'm trying to seek as much opportunity as possible. Mm-hmm. As long as I can wake up, you know what I mean, at some point build a family and my wife is happy and, you know, we're comfortable from a financial perspective, I'm good. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can, you know what I mean, we can make it work like that. But some people don't really, you know, have that mindset. Like, not everybody wants to attack things from the perspective of chasing an original idea. Some people like the security of being able to work up and go to a job, and there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know that and you out here trying to be an entrepreneur because of your cousin's an entrepreneur or your dad was an entrepreneur, then, you know what I mean, you're doing yourself a disservice when you could be much happier just being an employee. So it's just about self-awareness and knowing yourself. And then finding opportunities and forming opportunities around that.
Right, right. And you touched on being married. So what do you think, how has entrepreneurship changed your view prior to getting married to now?
It really showed me how important it is to have the right partner and the right like life partner. Like, my wife is extremely supportive. Like, I know that if I would have pursued anything with 95% of the females from the past, like, most of them probably wouldn't be hanging out, you know what I mean, hanging through what my wife is hanging through right now in terms of us, like, figuring everything out, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? It's something special, yo. Like, you know what, I know what it feels like to be with the right person for the right reasons, and it's just the most amazing thing in the world. And I can understand completely how somebody else has has an experience on the other end of the spectrum, because, like, this is not for
the faint of heart.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, not for the faint of heart. Yeah, it's not. You know what I mean? When that goes for you and your partner, like, it's a struggle, and you have to constantly think. Like, that's another layer that's now added to my head. Like I definitely want to have kids. Like, I'm the last Butler male, so I got to have kids. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I got to push the legacy forward. I got to keep the family name alive. So at some point, that's got to happen. Right. But it's like, you, when you launching businesses or you bringing money in and the money goes right back out to keep the ideas flowing and keep the business afloat and things like that, it can be a struggle. And not everybody's going to be down to go through that struggle with you. So it just taught me what it's like to be with the right person and what it means to be with somebody who truly cares about you and wants to support you and things like that.
Hey, man, salute to the wife, man.
Yeah, you man. Know, check her out, too, man. She's writing, fithemissary.com. That's 5-T-H-E-M-I-S-S-A-R-Y.com. She's working on some children's books and has also put out her first book a couple months ago called 50 Ways. So Ashley Butler is my wife, and she's at A Writer's Block on Instagram and Twitter. So check her out.
Yeah, is she an entrepreneur herself? I mean, is that all she does, or does she have a...
No, she's working on the side, too. She's working on the side. She just recently got out of corporate America and is chasing more, like we talked about before, like, her seeing me doing what I'm doing and working around things that have to do with my passion has kind of ignited her passion, and now she's looking for those opportunities for herself as well. So
the 1-2 punch, basically.
Yeah, we're trying to get there, man. It's hard work, and it's a struggle, but we're getting there. You know what I'm saying?
That's what's up. So as far as Charlotte goes, what do you like I said, I had Duppet Swat on a previous episode, and we had this conversation. He's one of the guys that I always talk to about, again, we talked about the identity of Charlotte. So mm-hmm. what is it you think, Charlotte, in your own personal opinion, mm-hmm. what do you think Charlotte is lacking to get to that next tier of just, you know, taking everything in stride and mm-hmm. not focusing and not having to depend on corporate America to get things done for us as minorities?
I think, you're talking about us as minorities specifically. I think
us specifically.
I thought you were talking about the city as a whole.
We'll touch on both of them.
Okay,
so,
word.
So I guess the first part is, like, I did ask a two-part question.
Got you.
What is Charlotte lacking? So you could talk about that part, but also let's kind of break it down to the nitty-gritty with us.
For sure. I think we can start, I think the city lacks a level of intentionality with how it operates. Or it has enough intentionality just in a different direction than what I would like to see. So I think that it's a very fiscally based thought process that runs the city. I think that there are systems in place that just run and operate and have been operating for decades, and nobody's really said anything. But now that things are starting to change on a national level and technology starting to change things, we're starting to see that, Charlotte is getting called out for some things, whether it's economic mobility, whether it's homelessness, whether it's affordable housing, all these different types of things. The wool is getting removed off of people's eyes. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are starting to see that, like, okay, yes, at a base level, the city is healthy, the city is growing, et cetera, et cetera. But what does that mean for the city itself and the people who existed here? And what does that mean for the people who are here before the growth actually happened? So I guess that kind of segues into the second part of your question, like, what do we need to do? I think it comes down to that, like I said, that self-awareness part. It comes down to creatives of color or creatives in our community. We have to take ownership and create different institutions and operations whether it's creating a and it's something that's sustainable. So creating a studio similar to what, you know, Dion and DeVito are doing with Dup and Swat, or your own take on that, or whatever it looks like, whether it's opening a restaurant, mm-hmm. whether it's opening a concert hall where you can go hear live jazz music and hear hip hop, and it's not a problem trying to work with the venue to get some. Like, we have to start to create the things that we aren't seeing instead of complaining that somebody else isn't providing them. We have to start being proactive and creating those things. And that's the mindset that I'm in, and that's the direction that I'm going in. And I'll be using Analog Luxury as a platform to do just that, to create a space where I see that there's a need. You know what I mean? And I think that's where we have to, that's where it is. We have to kind of study up, make sure that we, whatever business we want to go into, make sure we're passionate about it, make sure we love it, make sure we mm-hmm. learn the ins and outs, make sure we're studying people's businesses who have done it before. Or if nobody's done it before, be willing to take that risk. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have to, it comes to an ownership thing. Like, it's, that's, we just have to start building our own platforms and creating stuff for ourselves, and make sure that what we're creating is quality, and researching what the quality looks like. Because a lot of times, people will say, like, I try so hard to support black business, but I had this experience and that experience, which is cool because people learn and grow, and somebody's trying to provide you a good or a service. So, you know, you got a lot for that learning curve, because they may not be, you know what I mean? They maybe haven't done as much research, or maybe they learn and trial by error. So you may have gotten caught in that. You know what I mean? And I think we're a little bit more lenient on people on the other side. Like, how many times McDonald's messed up your order, but you still go to McDonald's? You know what I'm saying? A black restaurant messed up your order once. You telling everybody on Facebook you're not going there, and you're not going
back.
And
I think we're guilty of that. Yeah. I know personally for myself, and to an extent, I'm guilty of that.
Right.
And what I mean by being guilty of that, I'm not the type of person that will blast.
Right.
I would never blast another entrepreneur mm-hmm. on anything they're doing if they messed up something I got going on. I try to understand it from their mindset, because
exactly.
I try to understand it from their mindset. Why is it probably taking so long? So I try to keep it cool.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with asking questions, especially if they set a deadline or a mandate saying that they're going to do this at this time.
We don't really seek context. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we don't like people. I think that we allow for context in other situations that we don't allow for ourselves, which isn't a healthy thing, especially when you're talking about people who are taking a risk to provide a good or a service. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I think that we could do a better job of seeking that, of like, yo, like, why is it taking so long, or what's going on? Is everything cool? And then if somebody's like rude to you, or somebody, you know what I mean? Like, let's try and give each other a little leeway as people continue to build businesses and learn and grow. And of course, you don't have to take anything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, if somebody is a dickhead, like, you don't have to deal with it, of course. You know what I mean? But I think that we have more opportunity to, you know, provide a little leeway, learn why what's going on. You may learn something new about an industry that you didn't know about by
right.
asking a question.
I think it's a coaching opportunity. And I'll give a great example of that today on Instagram. I'm not sure if you follow Diddy. Diddy on Instagram.
Follow him, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot up there. But in this particular case, it wasn't per se on his IG. It was on Ball Alert
mm-hmm.
where an artist mm-hmm. Did two different portraits. She did one with DJ Khaled mm-hmm. and Asai, you know, the son that he always had with him.
Right.
And then there's another one with Khaled and Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
These two just happened to be walking in I don't know where they were. I don't know if it was LA or Miami or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see the beginning of it. I don't know if she walked up on them or they walked up on him.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose was she wanted to sell her art to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the question they asked, you know, this is dope. How much? She said $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Khaled was like, you know, well, Diddy said, okay, well, let me meet you where you at.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what he was trying to tell her was, maybe
you ain't on that level yet.
You're not on that level yet to do $3,000.
100%.
But he wasn't saying,
I'm not going to shop with you.
I'm not going to buy it.
Because
clearly, you know, it was in a cart. So
right.
She clearly was just starting out. She didn't have.
She tried
no,
to capitalize on the opportunity. She was
to
being an opportunist.
Which you can't be mad at the capital.
The hustle,
You can't be mad at the hustle, but that is something that you honestly got to think about at times. So Khaled was like, "Can I? You know, what about the discount?" But I get where he was going with it. He mm-hmm. was like, $3,000. I don't have $3,000, but I'm willing to give you $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said that, so before he said that, she asked. what do you think is a good price for me to start at? Mm-hmm. That's a coaching opportunity.
Right, right.
You know, and that's what Diddy was saying. Diddy was saying, you got to meet, you know, you got to start where you think you're at.
Yeah.
It wasn't saying that he didn't agree with the $3,000. Mm-hmm. He was just saying, okay, I'm probably never heard of you. Do you think $3,000 is a price point that you need to be starting at?
Right, right.
So Khaled Gage said, I'm going to give you $1,000. But Diddy turned around and said, I'm going to match that. Mm-hmm. So now you got $2,000 in your pocket. Mm-hmm. She said, you just paid my rent. Mm-hmm. But looking at the comments, in the comments kind of pissed me off because mm-hmm. they were saying, well, y'all worth millions of dollars. Why y'all just couldn't get a $3,000?
Because that's that. I mean, and that goes to like, it's like.
You get where I'm going with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's like, it's like, that's not even how, it's like, one, she's trying to, she clearly was just being an opportunist because she knew who it was and whoever was there was recording what was going on. So I don't know if it's a publicity stunt or whatever, like you never know in the world of media. But one, it's like, okay, one, is your artwork really worth that much? Like, you know what I mean? Is somebody going
to
charge
that's
you?
That's not up for me to decide.
Is somebody going to charge you $300 for a steak on the side of the street?
Should it?
Probably not.
Probably not.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're probably not going to walk up on a cart. You're not going to see anybody selling $200 hot dogs. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, there's infrastructure and things like that. It goes into consumer perception. Like, you're consumer right. perception is a real thing. Like, where somebody buys something has an effect, and who made it has an effect on how they feel it should be priced. That's why people buy BMWs and Benzes and mm-hmm. Polo and Jordan and whatever, right? So, or Nike and all that stuff. So, it's a couple, that's a very, very layered thing because it's one, you can't be mad at the hustle, but two, it's like, it is a coaching opportunity on like, yo, how long have you really been doing this? Cool, I'm glad we paid your rent, whatever, whatever. Like, it's a good moment. It's social media, so cool. But it's like, you can't just give somebody something because at that point, they're not earning it. And at the end of the day, that's not always how things are going to work. We're in America. This is a capitalistic environment. You need to really learn the principles of how to exist here, and asking and looking for handouts ain't it. You right. know what I mean? Like, it's different if it's like, you know what I mean? She could have got $3,000 for a grant that's going to allow her to master her craft a little bit more and do different things like that. But just to get $3,000 for a piece just because you know these people are rich, right. like, I think that that's kind of a crippling mindset to be in. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and they could have spent, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be mad at them for being like, nah, I'm good on that.
I wouldn't be mad either because, you know, it's like, at the end of the day, it is what it is.
They could have walked off, but I think they, again, like you said, I don't know who was recorded. I don't right. know if it was them.
Right.
Or I don't know if it was somebody on her end.
Right.
I don't think it was somebody on her end. It could be, I mean, Diddy, he always got somebody recording.
Right.
So it was a great, you know, it was a great opportunity for him to, regardless of how you look at it, mm-hmm. you could have, I mean, not you, just saying in general,
right.
to the person, like through the comments, oh, this looked like a stunt. I don't think it was a stunt mm-hmm. because it just looked too organic. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, like you said, she saw an opportunity and she said $3,000. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, hey, I want to meet you where you at, you know, but, you know, basically he would tell her. So, I mean, I hope she learned something from it, and I hope other people learn something from it as well.
Right.
It's okay to believe in your product. Mm-hmm. It's okay to believe what you think right. is worth. It's not up to me what I believe. If I think it's worth $3,000.
I mean, not for you as an individual.
Not me as an individual.
But as a potential customer.
As a potential customer.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
For sure.
But if you feel in your heart as the designer,
yeah,
I feel my shit is worth $3,000. Mm-hmm. You got to show why it's worth $3,000.
Exactly.
And like you said, the
exactly.
way she presented it on the street, I probably wouldn't have paid $3,000 for it. But the fact that they paid it $2,000 and helped her out, she could probably learn something from it. So who knows, man? We might see her. You know, later on down
she
the
could
line.
Blow up. Yeah, she could go viral, and then everybody wants to buy, like, you know, who knows. But that's the power of the internet, you know what I mean? And she took advantage of a moment, so shout out to her, the hustle, whatever it was. But, yeah, I don't think generally that that's a mindset that you should apply across the board. Like, there are principles that are kind of built into all of these different things and growing and learning. You're going to be a much stronger person, a much stronger salesman, a much stronger business person, as opposed to looking for those handouts or looking for those big opportunities to try and break it big. Going through the process again, that no shortcuts, like going through the process, there's a reason for it. You know what I mean? Like, life is set up in a way for that reason. So at least that's my belief.
Understandable. So I like that pose this question to everybody. I think this is more so the basis of my podcast. What's next? Like, what's next on the horizon for Dave?
So Analog Luxury should be, when this comes out, we should be in the middle of a funding campaign on Indiegogo, like I was talking about before, in terms of us taking ownership and doing things to provide solutions to the problems that we see and bridge our own gaps. part of what I'm doing with that is creating a showroom space for Analog Luxury to live in. Part of what I'm doing that is creating a space where I can work and do design work and, you know, work with clients and things like that. And a third part of that is a gallery and workshop portion and component where I can use this space to help empower other creatives to become business owners and operators. No matter what the space is, you know, we'll go over business basics. We'll go over finance, bring in a professional to talk about finance. We'll talk about legal. We'll talk about all these different things, and I'll come up with a rotating curriculum where people can come in and learn these different things in an environment where they're comfortable and don't have to feel bad about asking questions and all those different types of things. So I just want to be an entry point and be a bridge to bridge that gap for the workshop portion in terms of giving people information so that they can become business owners. And then the gallery portion of it is being able to be a legitimized institution that has a curated feel, that has a bar and a standard for people's work that we actually have on the wall. So being able to be a Black-owned gallery that has, or a Black-owned space that has a gallery component that can be considered a filter or kind of somebody who has a taste or a perspective on things, and being able to curate shows from artists who mm-hmm. also have a perspective on their work and have been doing things for X number of years, but may not have the opportunities or understand how things work to get the opportunities to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. In Charlotte, a lot of times we have, you have an entry point, like a Duff and Swat or a Black Market, where these are things where you can go and they're going to be people that look like you and y'all going to be doing dope things and everybody understands it. On the other end of the spectrum, you got something like the Mint Museum or the Beckler or the Gant Center or the Levine, and there's no filter in between to teach people how to get to that level, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, of being in a major museum or a major institution. So I just want to help be a part of that filter and kind of be that, like, what I like to call, like, a creative middle class, and show people, like, these are the steps that you can take to better your career, to build yourself a resume and a portfolio in art, and show and prove, you know, be able to get into, let's work on some residency applications. Let's, you know, work on getting you some grants so you can work on your work, and just kind of showing people the infrastructure on how some of these industries work and exposing them to that so they can start to build their path to be successful in whatever field they want to be successful in. So those are kind of the three main components of how the space will operate. The goal is 15,000. That'll allow the space to float for a year and allow for me to help grow the e-commerce side of the business via some investment. And that's the goal, man, is just to become one of these institutions, to provide a platform for artists of color and creatives in general to get those business principles so that they can start to exist and take part in some of this growth that's happening around the city. Because that's what's happening is, like, if you don't understand how this growth is happening or where, if you don't understand how the machine is working, you can't understand where you fit into the machine or how to manipulate the machine to your advantage. So I want to give people a few user manuals on the machine, hopefully, so that they can have a perspective, and at least it'll send them down the path where if they want to put in the work, they can get to where they want to go.
Okay. Hey, man. It sounds like you on your way, man, but I appreciate you coming in and talking to me, man.
I appreciate you having me, man. I'm humbled and blessed that you would even, you know, seek my opinion on these things and want me to talk about these things, so I appreciate it.
Hey, man, I think people need to hear that stuff. I think you are one of the ones that are really trying to do something in Charlotte. Just trying to get everything going, so I do appreciate the conversation. I know the listeners will appreciate that conversation. But we are going to wrap it up. But just before we go, tell them where they can reach you at, man.
You can find me at DaveHasWings.com. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter at Dave, D-A-V-E, underscore, Has, H-A-S, Wings, W-I-N-G-Z. So, and the website's the same thing, DaveHasWings.com. And you can reach out, man, tweet me, DM me, whatever, man. I'm here to help, you know, people get to the next part of their journey.
No doubt. And we are going to wrap this show up again. I'm your host, E-Dub, and I am coming at you from the Who Got Next podcast. If you want to reach out to me, do so. You can catch me on my own Instagram at the moment. Of course, I'm going to transition over. But as of right now, you know, you can catch me on you can catch me on edub_1906. And I will be coming at you with some other information. In the meantime, catch you on the next episode. Peace.